Northern Brewer is the proud sponsor of the Brewing Network's Jameel Show. They have the widest selection of domestic and imported malts and grain, hops from all over the world, and a full line of liquid and dry yeast. No matter what style of beer you're brewing, Northern Brewer has the ingredients you need, plus fast shipping and expert staff to help you make the best beer possible. Please visit northernbrewer.com for all things homebrew. Network is proud to present Beer Radio that turns ordinary homebrew into award-winning beer. The Jameel Show. And now, your hosts, Jameel Zainasheff and John Plisse.
Hey, howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters.
I can't get over that.
I told my daughter about it. She's like, really? I'm like, yep. I do hey, howdy, hey at the beginning of each show.
Oh,
she's
God.
Like, oh, wow.
Wow.
She loved it. She was
I'm
so going to
laugh every time, too. I'm like, I feel like it's Mr. Rogers or something, you know.
Very close. I've got my sweater on. Yeah, my vest.
This is how you make a gingerbread house, you know.
Very good thing to come to the neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah.
My brewing brothers and sisters. That's how that JP does an imitation of me.
It is. That's the JP version.
Exactly.
I love it.
It's like Mr. Rogers meets, you know, a beer.
Which would be a good thing.
Mr. Rogers needs a beer.
Yeah, he does.
I'm drinking Chad's brown ale brewed off of McDowell's recipe. Yeah, it's quite good.
Mm-hmm.
This guy knows how to brew.
Yeah, look out.
Yeah. The only person who can't learn how to brew is Justin. I don't know why that's the case.
I can't figure it out either. I try so hard, man.
it's very sad, very pathetic.
Well, all that energy is going towards like running, you know, top notch.
I wish that was a good excuse, but it's just not.
Dude, I'm trying to help you out here.
He knows radio.
He does know radio.
That's all I got.
I'll tell you the one thing. This whole show and the success we had, all that, all hinges off of Justin. This whole thing. Nothing without him.
Exactly.
So
I appreciate
that. I'm a boob with my thumb up my wart.
Without him, though, but...
Yeah, still, yeah.
That's right.
Even with him, I'm still a boob with my thumb up my wart. But, you know, all this never would have happened. I never could have done anything along the lines of this. Forget it. You guys would be not listening to this without Justin.
Exactly.
Trust me.
I think it's a fair trade.
If he gets hit by a bus, I'm telling you, you're not going to be listening to this anymore. You know, he goes, this all goes.
Uh-oh.
I appreciate that. I think it's a fair trade, though. You bring me good beer, and I try to bring the folks good radio.
I'm going to have to bring you some more beer. Yeah. But now you got Chad, so you don't need me anymore.
Uh-oh.
Chad's doing all right.
I think he's going to cut me off.
He's
I'm not going
to
be here. He's like, well, you know, you want to talk into that microphone, it's going to cost you. don't forget, the show is also brought to you by our good friends up north, Northern Brewer.
They got quite the staff there. I mean, mean makers, brewers, I mean...
They got some nice folks there.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody I met there has been very nice, very pleasant. And, and I got a lot of good friends out there that brew out there in homebrew clubs and stuff. And
shoot, their homebrew club of the year.
Yeah, and I got some great buddies in that club, and I'm very happy for them.
They earned it. You know,
contrary to popular belief, all the people in Coif are very happy for them, too, because it takes a lot to do that level of brewing from a club. You know, everybody's really working hard and making great beer, so they should take great pride in it. And,
collaboration.
I'll tell you, the folks at Coif are very, very pleased that another club's, you know, really stepping up and, you know, putting out that effort.
Because
it's not easy. And you guys at Doze, you know, doing it too. So that's just wonderful. That, you know, that's better beer for everybody.
But the worst thing is there's just greater beer for all of us.
That's the worst thing?
Never mind. It was a joke.
No. It's just wonderful. And if you go to the conferences, the NHC This last year was in Denver. Next year is going to be in Cincinnati in middle of June.
This is in June.
And I'll tell you that the beer there, the first one I went to was in Texas. You know, I don't know, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And the beer there was good. And you know, it just has gotten better every year that I've gone. And you know, in Denver, I don't think I got anything that I didn't think was great.
Awesome.
You know, every home brew that somebody brought up to me, you know, I was like, wow, that's really great. You know, and every you know, person in the hospitality suite, just wonderful.
Right on.
I mean, that's just fantastic. And so I think everybody's brewing better beer. And, you know, I think these competitions help.
Oh, yeah.
I think, you know, all the information out there, all these other shows, you know, they're doing great. Mm-hmm. You know, they're really helping promote better brewing.
The whole community just helps each other out.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
You know, everybody help each other. That's the way to go. We're really doing great.
I mean, I doubt we're going to retire from this.
No, since we don't make any money from it.
So it's going to be, it's great beer.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean, that's better than retirement.
We're not going to retire from it. The interesting thing is people ask me to send books, you know, as prizes for competitions and stuff. And it's like, you know, if I could get the books, like, other than buying them, I certainly would. I think people are assuming that I get the books for free.
Right.
But I don't.
No.
You know, I'm going to, like, buy some books, and I'm going to give them to my friends like you,
right.
And I'm going to go into Justin, and, you know, all these people who have, you know, helped me over the years. I'm definitely buying a bunch of books, and I'm signing them, I'm giving them to you guys. But I don't get the books for free. I'd be happy to sign any of them.
Sure.
But, you know, the publisher or, you know, some homebrew shops or something, if they could kind of, you know, team up with me, I'd be glad to help out on that.
Here we are.
But I can't supply a bunch of free books.
No.
It just like my wife
costs
would,
money
you know,
to
like,
make
smack
them,
me upside the head if I was, like, giving out. Well, because I got to go buy them.
Call your daughter. No college for you.
Yeah. I got to buy 100 books off of, you know, Amazon.com. So, you know, that's kind of the problem there. So sorry about that. I wish I could help out a little bit more. I'll show up to events. I'll do whatever I can. But
Jay-Z,
financial.
Just stop for a second. You know how much you're giving back to the homebrew community? No, stop. I'm making a point here. I'm just speaking my word. You know,
well, that's nice.
It's synergy. You know, you've given a lot back to the community. You've tons of hours to the competitions. I mean, what you do for everything, and you know, it's the least that people could do is buy a book from you. I mean, it's just like...
Well, they don't even have to buy the books.
Or not even that. Just the fact that they, you know, appreciate what you do for the homebrew community. I mean, it's...
Yeah, and if you knew what royalties were on books...
There's nothing.
You know, you don't... Yeah,
it's like CDs, you know.
Yeah, I'm doing it more because it's just fun.
Yeah. It's a love of beer.
Yeah. So, believe me, I'll be keeping my day job.
Yeah, yeah.
Software's got its hold on me.
IT and homebrew is a little different.
Yeah.
So we're talking about crazy Belgian here, right? Are we?
Yes. Okay. Jean-Claude Van Damme. No. He was...
That's true, he was.
Wasn't he Belgian?
He was Belgian.
He was Belgian, I think.
Yeah.
Jean-Claude Van Damme.
I used to watch all those movies, too, as a kid.
Jean-Claude. well, and that's because you're Cajun. Blise. From the Louisiana Bayou. I haven't mentioned that in a while. You're not Cajun, and you're not from the Louisiana Bayou, but it just, I don't know. I've been drinking.
Yeah, me too.
So. You know, Saison, and you know, one person who, you know, was like nuts about Saisons was my buddy Ross, who came out and brewed with me.
Oh, yeah?
Came out from Chicago, and we brewed a Saison, and boy, he's like, tried every Saison the world has to offer.
Really?
He's like, measured the final gravities on all of them, and
wow.
You know, guy's totally into it.
Wow.
That's the guy that's, you know, more sanitary than me.
Oh, yeah, you were talking about a couple shows ago.
Yeah.
Oh, I
want
to meet this gentleman here.
Well, he was here. He was here in the studio one time.
What?
Yeah, he came down, well, not during our show, but...
Sunday show?
During the Sunday show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Darn.
And, no, he's a real nice guy.
Okay.
He was at... he's usually at the conferences and stuff. I'm sure he'll be in Cincinnati.
Okay.
And just had a baby, so he may not be in GABF. He needs to lose that baby weight first. But,
right. You know,
he's probably still nursing.
Right, sure. Right.
You know.
Well, at least he's got beer to feed.
Exactly. Yeah, he's probably nursing with beer.
Yeah.
Bottle of Saison.
Yeah. Baby's sleeping great.
Yeah. Yeah, dear, I don't know. Doesn't have a problem putting him to sleep for me.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're doing, what you're feeding him, but yeah, we're, you know, he's happy when I'm feeding him.
And mother's milk, right?
Yeah. Saison.
Saison.
Probably milk stout. That's what he would call. He's not a crazy man. Would give a baby Saison. He'd give him milk stout.
There you go.
That's what I would do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking the other day.
Oh, this is great. I love this.
I know. I just can't stop talking. That's my problem.
Oh, I'm encouraging
you. I was thinking the other day, you know, those energy drinks, those Red Bulls and all these things.
Energy Star.
And there's one of those drinks called cocaine. They took it off the market recently, but they allowed this thing called cocaine, a drink, energy drink called cocaine. All right. They for the longest time, they wouldn't let people call things milk stout, but they allow people to have a drink called cocaine. You know?
Wow.
It's like, you know, and I would give my child a milk stout to drink before I'd give my child an energy drink called cocaine.
Now, how weird is that if your daughter
And those things
up?
Are like, you know, raging with caffeine
oh,
and sugar.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
Daddy, can
I
have a cocaine
beer,
after?
Beer, you know, dinner? I'm like, a beer is probably more healthy for you.
Yeah.
You know, I'd focus on the more low alcohol beers, but you know, geez, come on, you know, what kind of society we live in where beer is demonized and a over caffeinated sugar drink called cocaine is somehow great and acceptable, you know, and then beer is somehow some sort of a demon fluid. Oh, give me a break here, you know.
The
craft brewers out there, they're fighting this every day.
Yeah.
You know, they you know, it's like they're seen, you know, somehow as creating evil, but all they're doing is creating a little mellow good. It's the people that abuse it is the problem. So
I'm just thinking about the committee that approved the label approval for that, and like
for cocaine. Yeah, I mean, come on. Jeez.
Wow.
Oh well, you know, the kids, drinking, you know.
Yeah, that's
fine. Then I took my kids to Raging Waters, and there was this kid drinking. You know, he's like, got to be like 7 years old. He's eating a plate of those really crappy nachos with, you know, they're a bag of chips with, you know, cheese sauce squirted on them.
Yeah.
This is like his lunch, and a Red Bull. And he's like just slamming that Red Bull down.
Oh, no.
You're like 7 years old, and the mother's just sitting there, and I'm thinking.
Already got his caffeine fix.
What in the world? You know?
Man.
Anyways, enough of my whining and complaining.
That's funny shit, though. I'll tell you that much. I like that.
All right,
back to style. Let's
observations
talk about
of the world. Yes. Maybe that's what we'd go to after we ran out of styles. We're going to talk about Saison. Tell us about Saison, John.
Wow,
what do you expect when you drink a Saison?
Well, okay. Okay. Belgian Saison, the aroma, tons of fruit esters coming through. Definitely lots of citrus or lemons, maybe some grapefruit. Hops, low to medium spiciness from your noble hops. Some phenolics from hot fermentation. Maybe a hint of tart or sourness in the nose. Alcohol is soft and balanced with some malt. Visually, it should be gold, orange, amber in color. Long-lasting head retention. You know, I mean, they range up to almost 8% alcohol, so it depends on what you're brewing. High carbonation for sure. Clarity is clear to cloudy. You know, some people filter, some people don't. Overall, the flavor and the mouthfeel of this beer is, it's got a mix of fruitiness, some spiciness. It's definitely balanced with a good malt softness character coming through. Low to moderate alcohol, you know, maybe aroma and flavor coming through, some tartness. Hints of pepper, possibly. From a hot fermentation, you know, the phenols cutting through. Higher gravity, you know, the higher gravity this beer is, more over the top the flavors are, so maybe the sourness will increase. Overall, it's a medium to the strong Belgian ale. It's orange in color, usually, high carbonation, very fruity from the fermentation, which I can't wait to talk to you about. And, you know, usually a dry, acidic finish coming through, and usually a refreshing beer, you know. These guys are out farming their farms and their wheat fields or whatever.
And drinking.
They're drinking. You got to kill the pain somehow. So
farm equipment and drinking.
Yeah. Large motors.
See a little combine accident coming up here. I'm going out on the combine. Got me a couple of pints of Saison.
Done. Big plant grinder.
Yeah.
They're funky, good beers.
You know. Yeah. I think one of the common mistakes. So I think your description, of course, is accurate. I think the difference is sometimes people emphasize different portions of them. This is one of the problems with the BJCP style guide.
It's kind of over.
I think the BJCP style guide is awesome. Mm-hmm. I think it does a wonderful job of trying to catalog what's going on in the beer world. They're not trying to dictate anything to anybody. Anybody, you know, is against it because they've written something down. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird. But they're just trying to catalog what they see going on in beers nowadays. And the problem is people take that as like religion, and it's not. It's a great effort by a lot of very smart beer people to try and just kind of capture the essence of something, of a culture of beer in some place. It's come like this from the farmhouse breweries.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is when they mention something like spices or peppers or something or fruit or something like that, people glom onto that, and they tend to make these too spicy or fruity or, you know, way overboard. And I think on the best saisons, you know, all that spicy and fruity and all that all comes from the yeast. You don't need to add, you know, spices or fruits or anything like
sure.
that. It's all a fermentation-driven thing. You know, I was sitting with a very good friend of mine, and we were drinking a Belgian a strong dark. And he was like, "Oh, you know, I wonder what spices they put in this." I said, "I don't think they put any."
Yeah, it's all yeast derived.
He's like, "No, it's got to be." I think it's totally yeast derived.
Right.
So I'm not sure which one of us was right, but boy, I really believe that was all yeast derived. You can get such a beautiful intensity of the yeast. That's why yeast is so important. Fermentation is so important to all beers and all you know, anything you're brewing.
Well, manipulating the temperatures over the course of fermentation too. I mean,
exactly.
I mean, we should definitely talk about that. I mean, later.
That's really extremely important,
especially with this style.
For you know, any beer you're doing, and this style in particular. All right, so we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after this.
This fall, the most anticipated book in home brewing will be available from just one place.
You can get it in a lot of places.
Well, the most anticipated book in home brewing will be available for pre-order from only one place.
That's not true either.
All right, smarty pants, but only one place will have it signed.
Oh, that's cool.
TheBrewingNetwork.com offers brewing classic styles by Jamil Zainishev, the most awarded homebrewer in history, and homebrewing expert John Palmer. Available now for pre-order from the Brewing Network store, signed by Jamil himself.
It's every BJCP style. Every recipe is extract and all grain. Every single one has won awards. Every style has some tips on how you brew the beer, what to focus on, what the key parts are of brewing an extract. Excellent version of the style.
Available this fall, Brewing Classic Styles. Pre-order your copy today. Visit TheBrewingNetwork.com for more details.
This is The Jamil Show.
All right, we're back. We're talking about saison.
Saison.
See, you got that French thing going down. I'm telling you.
It's about as French as I
like Cajun.
I'm a Cajun. I'm your Cajun.
Say, you can do it. You can do it.
Please say.
Please say.
Please say, he can do it.
Please say, please say. All right, enough of that.
Yeah, I'm a big Rob Schneider fan, as a matter of fact.
That's good.
Oh, man.
I know, I'm pathetic.
No comment.
No. You guys are all like, yeah. He's sick, but he knows something about beer, so we put up with him. Thanks. I feel really good now.
Yeah.
Over here, I was having a good time. All right, so with Saison, and there's like new style guides come out. They're tweaking the style guides a little bit.
Cool.
And I think they divide it up into kind of the saisons, a little lower alcohol saisons, a little more common, and then like a special saison, which is the higher alcohol version.
Okay.
And regardless of what kind of version you're making, the thing that, you know, besides going overboard with spices and all this stuff, which you don't need to add, the biggest problem people have with Saison is they don't finish dry enough.
Right.
I mean, this needs to be bone dry.
Ooh, bone.
Like
dry.
You're in the desert. I like the way you say that.
Yeah. Bone.
Like being in the desert.
Right.
You know, that dry.
That dry.
And
well, that's what gives it its refreshing character.
Right, right. Right. It's like you know, making you know, a Imperial IPA needs to finish fairly dry,
sure.
And that you can carry a lot of things, a lot of flavors and essences and things like that. If you have a nice dry finish, and it's, you know, very refreshing and easy to drink,
mm-hmm.
even if you go up in alcohol, as long as it finishes nice and dry. I was at the GABF and I went around. I tried every saison that people had, and I was talking to Stan Hieronymus, and he was like, you know, none of them are dry enough.
Yeah.
And, book. You know, as I go and try, you know, saisons from around the world, it's like, yeah, you know, and I could see, and I actually liked New Belgium's saison, but I had to admit, it finished kind of sweet.
Yeah.
But I really liked the flavor profile of it. It was really good. But, you know, and it's okay to kind of Americanize it and, you know,
sure.
make it a little sweeter finish. But if you're trying to emulate a classic style, if
right.
you're trying to do well in competition, you need that really dry, crisp finish.
Right. Well, I talked to you and Stan at the GABF last year, and...
And what did I say?
Close. Yeah. The 2 minutes I had to talk to you guys, I mean, you guys just said, you know, it's all about the fermentation and really helping it along at the end of the fermentation.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Raising the temperature and stuff, so...
Well, that, and, you know, don't be afraid to use plain old sugar, table sugar.
You know, during the boil?
Yeah.
Or fermentation?
Yeah, in your the makeup of your wort.
Oh.
To, you know, you replace some of your base malt with that.
Okay.
And, you know, it ferments easily by the yeast, and so it's, yeah, you end up with a drier finish.
Huh.
Yeah, you go 20%.
Wow.
And without a problem, I think.
It's a good tip.
So, on my standard saison, not my special saison, my standard saison, I go original gravity about 1060, 14.8 Plato, and you're trying to finish around 008
oh,
or 2
man.
Plato.
That is dry.
That's an apparent degree of fermentation, about 86%.
Wow.
Okay, you really want this thing to dry out. 27 IBUs. It's got a firm bitterness because it's so dry, so it's such a low residual sugar.
Right.
27 IBUs kind of pokes through.
Right, sure.
You know, you get a nice firm bitterness. 5 SRM, so a light color. 6.9% alcohol by volume. And... if you're an extract brewer, you're going to go with Pilsner liquid malt extract and some at 7.7 pounds, 3.49 kilograms. Cane sugar, you can use a pound or 0.45 kilograms. Wheat liquid malt extract, 0.75 pounds or 340 grams.
Mm.
A Munich liquid malt extract. A half pound or 227 grams. Then you're going to steep some Care Munich, 60 Love, 2 ounces, 57 grams. And the main, you don't want a whole lot of caramel flavor in this.
Sure.
But just a slight hint. And you know, the 60 Love starts to get in that raisiny kind
yeah.
of range.
Great
you can
nuts.
Go 80. You
yeah.
can go, you can even go, you know, 120.
Uh-huh.
But it adds a little bit of color. It helps with that orange color.
And you want that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're an all-grain brewer, you're going to go with 10.5 pounds of Continental Pilsner malt, or 4.76 kilograms, and 0.75 pound or 340 grams of wheat malt, and the same amount of Munich malt. That's 340 grams. You're going to mash this at 147 degrees Fahrenheit, or 64 degrees C.
That's dry.
Yeah.
Highly fermentable.
And, you know, if that doesn't work for you, go down to 145.
Right.
You know, and hold that thing. And one of the things about a lower mash temperature is it takes a little longer for conversion to happen at a lower temperature.
So you'd mash longer than an hour.
Yeah, you may find... What I've started doing is an hour and a half. Just because...
Why not?
The time doesn't yeah. really matter to me. Yeah. And you want this thing as fermentable as possible.
Right.
So I may do like 145, 146, 147 in that range. And just let that thing sit and get that as fermentable as possible.
Interesting.
And you know, that plus the plain table sugar. And you can get this thing to dry out.
Is there a point where the beta amylase in that range, the 145, you get below that, that they don't even convert? Like, say you by accident hit 139. Mm-hmm. I mean, are you...
Oh, yeah. Well,
I mean, or 141.
You know, I've seen a bunch of stuff recently where they say, oh, you know, it's all... You know, it's a much wider range than you thought before.
Sure.
You do have to get up to a high enough temperature so the starches become soluble and accessible.
Okay.
And also, you know, there are certain starches, you know, you need to get up high enough so the, you know, the long chains are broken off and then broken into small chains. Right. So, you know, one of the things you could possibly do is vacillate between like a, you know, a 150, 152 and then back down to 148, 147 okay. and try and get this thing, you know, to get the most out of it. But I think it just hanging standard there. If you want to do a protein rest, you know, maybe 131 degrees Fahrenheit, C is like whatever, 40 or
40
50, whatever it is. And then, you know, go up from there slowly. Uh-huh. I did a batch where I started out the protein rest and I raised 1 degree every 2 minutes.
Right.
You know, and I slow raise up to like in the mid 140s and held it there uh-huh. and did all that. It still wasn't fermentable enough.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, I would just go infusion mash with the modern malts we have today
okay.
and, you know, 147. And if that doesn't work out, you know, do it again and do it lower. Add more sugar to it
okay.
to get that to ferment out dry enough. As far as hops go, I like to use Hallertauer. You could use, you know, Kent Goldings. You can use, you know, Styrian Goldings. You could use, you know, just about any noble hop is appropriate, I think. But Hallertauer, that's a nice balance for me. I like it in a lot of beers. At 4% alpha acid, at a 60-minute addition using the Rager formula, we need about 1.7 ounces, 48 grams. It's going to give you about 26.5 IBUs. Your next addition is going to be at 0 minutes, 0.75 ounces, or 21 grams. And that's going to give you a nice, light, floral, spicy kind of character.
Sure.
If you age this, a lot of that will drop away. That's okay. It doesn't really need to have that, but it's kind of nice when it's fresh to have that hop character to it. Hmm. As far as yeast goes, I like the Y-Yeast 3724 Belgian Saison. It's a good yeast, will good flavor, and it'll attenuate nice and dry. The White Labs WLP's 565 Saison Ale is a good product. They've actually come out with a Saison 2,
uh-huh.
And I'm not sure what's in that. I really haven't tried that, and that may be a better choice.
Okay.
Because the Saison Ale, as it is, really, you know, I tried batch after batch. I tried every little piece of magic I know to
it's a kind of
make
magic.
This thing to attenuate down, and the thing just stopped at 75% every time. And I just have no idea why that is. Huh. So if you're using that Saison Ale, you really need to be careful, and you need to control your temperatures very carefully and jack it up. I mean, I went up into the 90s.
You're just like, come on.
For experimentation. Yeah, and that actually slowed it down. Once it got to 85, past 85, it slowed down.
Interesting.
So you don't want to exceed 85 with that yeast.
But you can't make a Saison without a Saison yeast strain.
Right. And that's such right. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
There's just a flavor that yeast produces.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, 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 yes. And if you're getting a, you know, if you're looking for a flavor like cork, you know.
You're looking for cork?
Well, sometimes, you know, if sure. you get some of those commercial examples, you get like this cork flavor.
Like
that yeah. comes from the cork that they put, you know,
right.
that they stopper the bottles with.
Right.
It's not from the yeast.
Okay.
You know, so, you know, without that, you know, you get this, you know, this real earthy kind of corked flavor in some of the samples.
Cardboard.
Yeah, without it, yeah. you know, well, it's different than that. It's kind of it's, you know, corked. It's like if it's a very definite, you know, flavor.
Okay.
And, you know, you won't get that from the yeast, but you get, you know, the spiciness, and you get a lot of the interesting fruity flavors from that yeast.
Okay.
Now, you're going to need to pitch, you know, a fair amount of yeast. It's about 2.5 liquid yeast packages using the XL packs, using the vials from Wine Labs. Or, you know, make yourself a, you know, appropriate starter.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take too much on a starter. Ferment at 68 degrees Fahrenheit or 20 degrees C. And then you're going to do that to start. And one of the reasons you want to do this, you want to avoid any hot alcohols, right?
The fusels, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you want some fruitiness, and you'll get that and some spiciness. But, you know, you don't want to start off, you know, raging hot. You start out 68 Fahrenheit, 20 degrees C. And then over the course of, say, a week, by the end of fermentation, you want to get yourself at least up to 80 degrees Fahrenheit or 27 degrees C.
Now, how much sugar depletion are you talking about? I mean, 60%, 70%? Are you waiting right at the tail end, maybe two or three days?
At the tail end, you're going to have maybe, 10, 15% of your sugars left.
Okay. Wow. You know? So if you're trying to get to 08, you're looking at like 10, 20, you might raise it up a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And I would raise, I would start at 68 or 20 degrees C. For the first maybe 2 days, you know, it's once you get past your growth phase and all that, and all your yeast is there and everything's active, and things are going fairly well, I would go from 68 after the first 2 days, maybe and raise it to like 1 or 2 degrees per day.
Just keep ramping it
up.
Yeah,
just slowly ramping it up.
Okay.
Again, one of the biggest benefits to your brewing and beer quality is temperature control.
Oh, yeah.
Precise temperature control over your beer temperature while it's fermenting. Huge.
Oh, yeah.
This is, I would do this before going all grain.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if I was an extract brewer and looking to improve my beer, temperature control. You know, pitch in lots of, high quality white labs or white yeast, appropriate amounts, good health. I would do that first, and then I'd do temperature control, and then, everything else is,
the yeast make it for you. I mean,
yeah, that is so important to the quality of the beer.
Sure.
It's up there with sanitation. It really is. You know, if you're going to be spitting in your beer, then okay, you can go ahead
that
and avoid controlling temperature too.
But how important is that with this style of beer, would you say? It's critical. Okay.
And especially that ramping up. And so if you have a good temperature controller, and you got an environment that works. So the room needs to be cool enough,
mm-hmm.
or the fridge you have it in needs to be cool enough that it won't run away by itself.
Sure.
When the yeast get active, but you can overcome that temperature with like a firm wrap or something like
right.
that, which is like a plastic wrap that goes around the carboy
bucks and, or something. Too.
Yeah, and then ramp that up.
Right. Shouldn't even one of those blankets, electric blankets work.
Yeah, you can go to Walmart and for $10 you can get yourself an electric blanket. It's not quite as slick as the other thing, and I use the firm wraps, but you use whatever you can afford.
It's pretty hot out right now here in Concord,
mm-hmm.
California, or Pacheco,
mm-hmm.
I should say. Could I brew right now? You say saison, pitch at 65.
And
just let it naturally ramp up over to the 3-5 day course?
Yeah, you could. You want to pick the coolest part of your home for that.
Right.
Okay, because it will, take off pretty quick.
Okay.
So if you can get the first couple of days at a cooler temperature and then let it go,
uh-huh.
although it probably won't hit in the 80, up to 80.
Right.
But, and I think that high temperature there, you'll see, as it's starting to slow down, you'll raise the temperature up and you'll see it go more active.
Right.
One part of that is just driving off the CO2 as the temperature rises, the ability of the liquid to hold any gas
right.
diminishes and the gas will come out. But you'll also see the yeast getting a little more active.
Okay.
They'll have less partial pressure of CO2
sure.
Restricting them.
If they've already vetted that off.
It'll come out just from raising the temperature.
Yeah.
And also the yeast, they like it a little warmer, a little more active. Still a few sugars left. Okay, we'll go ahead and we'll eat these sugars.
Interesting.
So that's really very, very critical to do that.
Now, I'm sorry to get off on your thing, but is there a different ester production going on there? I mean, 65, are they still producing any type of... I assume they're still multiplying at the 80 range, they've already grown.
They're pretty much done at that point.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeast are always producing, various compounds as intermediaries to,
right.
Making alcohol and feeding themselves essentially and
sure.
growing.
Okay.
But, it's very critical to do that. If you find out that the beer doesn't attenuate enough, you're going to need to add a secondary yeast. You can add the California Ale yeast or White Yeast 1056, WLP01, or you can add some dry champagne yeast, anything to get that thing to dry down. When you're finished, you're going to carbonate about to 3 to 3.5 volumes,
mm-hmm.
so nice and spritzy.
Right.
And that also helps with that dry perception as well.
Right.
If you want to make the specialty saison, then you essentially just jack up the original gravity and the hops. For me, I changed the original gravity. I add enough base malt or malt extract to raise the original gravity to 1070. You don't need to increase the specialty malts, just the base malt.
Okay.
Either your Pilsner liquid malt extract or your Pilsner malt. to get yourself to 1070 original gravity, 17 Plato, and then it'll attenuate not quite as far, same percentage, but you'll get down to like 1011.
Okay.
And then you're going to need to increase the hops to get the a little bit more IBUs. You're going to go from 1.7 ounces to 2 ounces or 57 grams.
Nice.
To get that.
Okay.
Okay. Hmm. All right. So after the break, we're going to come and answer a bunch of listener questions. We'll be right back.
Can you imagine a world without liquid yeast or German Pilsner malt? No rinse sanitizer. East Kent Goldings. Neither can Northern Brewer. Since 1993, Northern Brewer has been dedicated to spreading the enjoyment of good brewing and good beer by bringing these and other products to homebrewers everywhere. They have a comprehensive selection of ingredients and equipment for making beer, mead, wine, cider, and soda with thousands of different items in stock. Everything you need in one place at a great price. Tech support and order advice from their expert and friendly staff is available by email or phone 7 days a week. Fast and accurate shipping combined with their central location in Minnesota, USA. Means you never have to wait long for your order. Request a free full-color catalog by calling toll-free 1-800-681-2739 or visit them online at northernbrewer.com.
This year, the Great American Beer Festival will last for 3 days, have more than 40,000 visitors, more than 380 breweries, more than 1,600 beers. But only one lucky listener will be going for free. Beer, Beer, and More Beer, the Brewers Association, White Labs, and the Brewing Network are sending you on the beer trip of the year. Airfare, hotel, all festival sessions for free. Brought to you by the Brewers Association, White Labs, Beer, Beer, and More Beer, and the BN. Visit thebrewingnetwork.com for more details.
Live Beer Radio. Brewing Network.com.
The Brewcasters.
If you're just starting, don't be discouraged by all this stuff. Exactly. It's so easy.
Just throw it together.
Put some sugar and some water and some yeast in there.
Yeah.
Brewing Network.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't.
Now, back to the Jameel
Show. I feel
show.
Good. I knew that I wouldn't.
We're back. We're drinking Chad's beer.
And I feel good.
You know, when McDole can't show up, Chad's not a bad alternative.
Yeah, look out.
It's kind of pretty darn good. I don't know if it's my empty stomach or it's kind of a strong beer.
It is.
It is a strong beer.
As it warms up, I'm getting a little bit of alcohol from that bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's got a little toot to it there.
Not bad.
A little toot to it. Yeah, just like Justin. A little toot to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and I saw McDole the other day. That's probably why I'm in such a good mood. I love that guy.
He's like he's Gandhi.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
He's the brewing Gandhi.
You know, him and Chad are best buddies now.
Oh, yeah.
Chad's like Indira.
They're inseparable, two.
Yeah. They're very similar.
Hey, that's good for Chad. I'm telling you. It's great for his brewing to be hanging out with McDole.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I tell you, You can't, if somebody helping you brew and it's McDole.
Yeah,
it can only be great. But and I just if he didn't brew beer, I'd still love that guy.
Oh yeah,
he's just a wonderful person.
Oh yeah,
his dog is shacking up with my dog now.
It's good.
Yeah,
he's putting it to your dog.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
and he's fixed, so you're set.
Yeah, it's all fine.
Oh, he's just enjoying himself. And Justin is Justin's dog is just taking it. Justin's not.
He's always got Biscuit.
Oh, this is disgusting already. All right. So, we were going to get into questions.
Yeah. I got a few things from the chat. A lot of people hanging out tonight. Like to see that. Okay. This wasn't a question, but I thought I'd bring it up to you so you could talk about it. Somebody was talking about a recipe that they did. It was a kit from a homebrew shop. Mm-hmm. It was a Saison kit. They fermented it at 66, and they weren't too happy with the beer, and I think didn't think it tasted much like a Saison. I thought maybe you'd want to talk about that.
Yeah, definitely. 66 is starting to get a little too low. And you wouldn't, if you started at 66, you wouldn't want to carry it through all the way. So again, start maybe 68, 20 degrees C, and you know, after the first day or so, you're going to start ramping that temperature up. You need to get to 80 degrees Fahrenheit or 27 degrees C. And that, you know, you'll get the right flavor profile with that. And part of it is, you know, attenuating everything down low enough, and you know, it'll be there. And one of the things, here's one of the things. I hope we got time for this. I was realizing the other day was that, you know, one of the reasons I like to start at a lower temperature, especially in a beer that has a bit of alcohol, is that you don't want hot alcohol. You want an alcohol that, as you serve the beer a little warmer, the beer blossoms. Those fruity esters, those spices, they come out in the beer. The malt character comes out. Mm-hmm. If you need to serve a beer cold enough to suppress that hot alcohol taste, that harshness, the malt disappears.
Mm-hmm.
The fruity esters kind of get subsided. You know, the spiciness gets subsided. And if you warm it up enough for those things to come out properly, mm-hmm. then that hot, harsh alcohol is annoying.
Right.
So you want to serve all these beers a little warmer than, you know, your average, you know, Budweiser you're going to find on draft somewhere.
Sure.
You know, it can't be that cold. You want to be, you know, in the 50s Fahrenheit. And that allows all these things to blossom and really come out. And you get the malt, you get the hops, you get the spices, you get the fruity esters without it being overwhelming. It becomes a very nice thing. And the hot alcohols need to be, you know, suppressed. So again, starting at, you know, 68 degrees Fahrenheit, 20 degrees C, and then, you know, letting it ramp up from there, I think, you know, ending around 80 degrees Fahrenheit, 27 degrees C will really do a nice job. I mean, you'll get all those flavors from it, trust me.
Right.
All right, ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, another guy about your mash temperature. He was curious if you could mash all the way through at 145
mm-hmm.
and just finish that way, or do you have to do a mash out?
You don't have to do a mash out.
Okay.
You know, the difference being, and especially in something like this, I think it's okay. You know, when you run out of the kettle, you know, it's still there's still some enzymatic action going on there.
Mm-hmm.
Some conversion going on, so it's all right.
So the way I understand when you do a mash out, Doc was explaining a couple weeks ago, it's to kind of seal the deal. Like you've done all that enzymatic activity, and mm-hmm. and the mash out stops it.
It stops it, and also makes it a little easier to run out your wort.
Okay,
because it thins out the viscosity of the thing, and it'll run out a little easier. So.
Okay,
but yeah, if you don't want to, fine. So, and especially if you got an infusion mash, and you don't have the ability to recirculate and raise the temperature very well,
yeah,
certainly, you know, don't worry about it.
Okay,
I think that's a good question. I mean, do you think enzymes still convert after a 45-minute, 60-minute mash? Like, let's if your mash drops 5-10 degrees, you think you're still doing something within the mash?
Well, it depends on you know, the crush. It depends on the thickness of the mash. It depends on a lot of different things. You know, there tends to be a little bit here and there.
Okay.
And if you're sparging, sometimes you can you know, with a hotter water, you can you know, so
something
that I think it's not nearly as important as people put on it.
Sure.
You know, again, I think that the most important thing is fermentation.
Okay.
And then you know, the rest of the stuff is, there's a lot of leeway. Put it that way.
Okay.
All right. Are hops and yeast mostly the flavor that's coming from this recipe?
Yeah, the majority of your flavor comes from the yeast. That's going to give you your fruitiness. That's going to give you your spiciness. That's going to give you the traditional Saison character. So it's very important to use a high-quality liquid yeast on this. You can't get by with a dry yeast. There's no way you can make Saison with a dry yeast.
Okay.
You need a White Labs or a white yeast product in order to do this.
Okay.
The hops do add an interesting signature note, and the base Pilsner malt, you will taste that. But, yeah, yeast and hops.
Okay. This, I think, is a really good question, because it sounds like a dumb question, but it's not a dumb question, so it's like my question.
There is no dumb question.
Which Hallertau are you talking about? And I always wonder this, mm-hmm. too, because a lot of times recipes just say Hallertau, Which one are we talking
about? It's very difficult to get like middle fruit because it's such a tiny little region, a tiny little amount that's grown, and you know, tradition or you know, Herzbrucker. I think you can use any of those. Like I said, you could actually not use Hallertauer. You can use something else.
Okay.
It's just, you know, a flavor you're comfortable with that you think is going to go well with that. So I would use, you know, whatever your local homebrew shop can supply you with, as long as it tastes good and they're fresh and, you know, it's a nice smelling hop, go with that.
Okay. And then the last thing I saw them just kind of discussing in the chat room right here at the end was kind of the sourness of this beer. Is coming from the wheat? Is that what you had said?
No.
Okay.
Again, wheat doesn't produce any sourness.
Okay.
Of itself. Now, that would be, you know, it would either be a yeast-derived, you know, flavor or, you know, not, I don't think you're going to get a sourness. And I don't think you have to have a sourness in a Saison.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough. And then last thing before you wrap things up, we kind of had a special guest appear. I thought it might be cool to have him talk about the yeast for a second.
Yeah.
It's a white.
Isn't that cool? Chris White just walked in the studio. We're doing some work tonight.
That's awesome.
Chris, how are you?
Good. Hello. Thanks.
So it's the Saison show for Jamil. And I just thought maybe if for a second, even if you just wanted to describe the characteristics people could expect out of the White Labs Saison yeast, that might be kind of cool for people. A little added feature to the Jamil show.
Well, and talk to us about the Saison 2.
Okay, well, the Saison yeast is really going to bring out the hops very nicely. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
The Saison yeast produces a lot of the spicy, phenolic character, but the regular Saison yeast we have tends to slow down right about 50% attenuation. It's really designed to be used with a mixture of yeast strains, and so some people will finish those fermentations out with a house yeast or a different yeast strain, or if you're in an open fermentation where you allow the temperature to rise higher, it'll finish out without that additional yeast.
I was saying earlier in the show, I could never. No, I tried every little piece of magic I could. I could never get that yeast to go past 75%.
75%. Okay.
You know, I tried every temperature up into the 90s. You know, and it stopped at 85. It wouldn't. It refused to ferment past 85. I got the temperature back down to 85, and it started again.
You know,
that's amazing.
You know, that is interesting because then I think every brewery is a little bit different. Home brewery, professional brewery, whatever. Your equipment, because there are some commercial breweries
here.
I know that get it up into the 90s or just close to 90,
uh-huh.
And it still chugs along fine.
Yeah. Well.
So what works in one place with a yeast strain doesn't always behave
right,
the same.
Yeah.
But the Saison 2 is, we just look through a lot of different Belgian strains to find a strain that produced similar flavors but fermented better. So the Saison 2, it is different in flavor. It's a little bit more bready. It's not quite as strong in the phenolic character, but it tends to finish out the fermentations without the extra fiddling.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't have that slowdown right about 50%.
Or would you suggest people go with the Saison and then pitch another yeast, you know, maybe halfway through?
Yeah, I like the creativity that gives a brewer.
Oh, and you like people buying two tubes of yeast. Admit it.
Well, yes, true.
Of course.
But, you know, what actually works better even than buying more yeast is to use another yeast they might have,
mm-hmm.
because it's really hard to get any yeast to work in a fermentation that's already going, where you don't have any oxygen,
mm-hmm.
where alcohol's already created.
Low, alcohol's high.
So what works best is almost to take something else that's fermenting, almost like a krausening,
mm-hmm.
where you take a two-day fermentation, you take some of that wort that's still fermenting, and you add that in.
Mm-hmm.
You can pull some yeast out of a refrigerator, too, and get it activated, but it's a little bit more work.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes you add yeast to an already going fermentation, and it just kind of laughs at it and falls to the bottom.
Back when I was starting out, I'd try things like, you know, whatever champagne yeast like people would recommend, and you dump that in, and nothing happens. You know, it just falls to the bottom, and you actually see nothing. You have to get the yeast going, or like you're saying, you have to take it from an active fermentation, add that, and it makes an impact.
Right. If it's already metabolizing sugars, it will do that in what you the saison or whatever beer you add it to. Mm-hmm. It'll keep going. Mm-hmm. And you'll have something that'll finish out in a couple of days rather than continuing to have something going slowly and have to
chugging along.
It.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And then some people just like to let the saison finish out too. And if you've got a few weeks, that can happen.
It'll keep going.
I've never been able to get it quite dry enough.
Dry enough. Yeah, that's important. I'm, the drier, the better.
But the flavor profile is beautiful. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love it. It's, you know, it really is fantastic. It's just getting it dry enough.
Yes.
How about that? Having the white come in right from the horse's mouth. And then just real quick, because Jamil addressed a question a little earlier, so I just wanted your take on it, too.
So somebody, you didn't trust my answer?
No. Why not have the guy who makes this stuff, you know?
Answer.
He invents these things, I think, somewhere in his pants. 66 degrees for your saison yeast, somebody fermented. What do you think about that?
It'll work. You know, we put a lot of things, sometimes warnings about temperatures. Don't get this yeast under 66. Or mostly because if somebody starts out at that temperature, they might have trouble.
Okay.
But when you have yeast that are actively fermenting, they'll withstand some temperature changes. So even the saison yeast, same with California ale yeast and other strains, where we say don't ferment the strain at 55 or 60. And a lot of people will regularly ferment it at 65.
Gotcha.
Or 60. Or California ale yeast at 55.
Yeah.
But it won't work for the next person.
Yeah.
Is it safe to say that all yeast perform differently? The different strains that you make?
Not only the different strains, but also in different beers, in different fermenters.
Wort even? Wort profiles?
Yes.
Sugar availability?
Mm-hmm. Nutrient levels and oxygen being one of those.
Everything. Nutrients. Every little thing makes a difference.
Well,
that's why it's so critical. Fermentation is so critical. The quality of the yeast you're using, the health of the yeast, the amount of the yeast, the temperature, you know, oxygen, every little thing makes a difference. And learning how to control that is critical to making great beer. You know, I heard you on the Sunday session a while ago, and I was at Sierra Nevada and in their pilot brewery. And I was walking around, we're tasting all the different beers from the fermenters, and one they had like a Schwartz beer or something. I'm like, hey, I'm a big Schwartz beer fan, you know, I'm trying this. I'm like, wow, you know, real sulfury, you know, but it's still in the fermenter, and it's like, okay, trying it out, and I'm thinking, oh, you know, boy, you know, I wonder what lager yeast they use in this. And I flip the tag around, and it's their ale yeast that they were using at, you know, 55 or 53, and it tasted so much like a lager to me. Mm. That I thought it was interesting. Now, of course, that has no bearing on WLP-001, but, you know, it's a similar type of story to,
right.
You know, that some ale yeasts, you know, at lager temperatures.
Right. California ale yeast, you won't get much sulfur out of it at higher fermentation temperatures. What little you do just blows out. But you ferment it at 55, where it's a little colder, and that small amount of sulfur does stay in solution at the colder temperatures, and then you're going to taste it.
Yeah, that was a huge eye-opener to me. I was thinking, you know, wow, I wonder what other yeast you can ferment really cold with, and you get that sulfur. You know, the colder you go, maybe you get more sulfur, and lager yeast, the warmer you go, the more, you know, esters you get, and, you know, there's a real gray area there where, you know, it's... Mm-hmm. It'll do a lot of different things depending on what you're doing. And this is, you know, to the person who is doing 66, you know, it's a little too cold. And you know, at least for the type of style of beer we're trying to make and phenols and, you know, get that spicy and fruity, you're going to have to go warmer. And you can start out cooler, but, you know, and here's one thing. I like to start almost all my Belgians. I like to start... generally, like maybe 68, let it go for like a day. I have, you know, a good active pitch yeast. I start about 68, and then after a day, I start to ramp the temperature up. And I get just a wonderful, I still get all the flavor, but it's not a hot or a harsh alcohol, things like that from that kind of technique. And that seems to work really well for me.
Yeah, I think. And a lot of commercial breweries do that, too. The brewery you just mentioned, Sierra Nevada, you know, they've noticed with some of their beers, lager beers, they ferment at higher temperatures. They like some of the flavor profile they're mm-hmm. getting. So mm-hmm. they've gone a little, I don't want to say what beers, but they have noticed that if they ferment warmer on some of the lager beers, that they like it better.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have been working for a lot in going the opposite direction. but now trying to raise the temperatures a little bit. And so you're seeing that too. That's
good. This is the cell phone show. Yeah. Everybody's phone is right.
This is a cell phone show. Awesome. It's good music.
Yeah, and
cell phone.
Well, and I think that's an important part. You know, not only do you need to play around with the various strains that are offered, but you can take one strain, and this is one thing I did early on was I took a couple strains of yeast, and I would ferment batch after batch using that same strain of yeast, and I try different temperatures, I try different pitching rates, I try different no oxygen, I tried different worts, and it's amazing the flavors and the different, you could take the same wort, side by side, and just a couple of degrees temperature difference makes a significant difference in the beer. It's and with enough change in pitching rate or temperature or oxygen, you would swear they were two different yeasts. Have you found that, Chris? I imagine.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's just like night and day, and you'd say, oh, that's completely different.
And for Saison beers, particularly Saison beers, we'll get a lot of commercial breweries who will say, we made a Saison, and we didn't really get the flavor we were looking for, because they're so used to fermenting beers, 68 being the top. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so it's hard to even think of letting a beer go into the 70s, and in the 80s is just seems...
Absurd.
Absurd, sure. Yeah, well, but when they do it... Yeah. And then they do it maybe the next year, and they allow it to, say, free rise, mm-hmm. and then maybe the cap would be 85 a lot of times, but let it free rise, they're just really shocked at how much better balanced it actually is, because now the yeast produces some of the flavors you're expecting in a Saison, and it actually tastes a little more balanced than not having those flavors there.
I would say if you're making anything Belgian and you're not happy with the flavor, go warmer rather than colder most of the time. And then if you're trying to emulate some sort of American pub brew that is, clean in nature, a lot of times you may want to go colder if you're like already in the 70s. You might want to go lower and try that. But yeah, on all those, the Saison, on, Beer de Garde, on, many different Belgian-esque beers, a little warmer is always better.
Well, a lot of those crazy phenolics and stuff will mellow out as you age them too, so definitely let them age. They'll still be there, but they won't be as present.
The one thing that I worry about and that I really don't like in a lot of beers, home-brewed versions of Belgian beers, is a hot alcohol. So, you can have a nice warming alcohol. It shouldn't be solventy or, it shouldn't be like a paint thinner. It should be just a warming flush that comes through. You shouldn't notice it when you first drink it, but once it's in your stomach, you should feel, the warmth rise throughout you. That's, what I feel is ideal. And I think, starting a little more controlled, and then going up is the better way to go for that character.
I think you're right about that with any nice Belgian, too. I agree with you that it's not overwhelming up front, but like a Jack Daniels or something, like afterward, it just warms you up. It's a good beer.
When I first started judging, I didn't want to judge Belgians because they were all really harsh and would give me this horrible headache. And then once I went to Belgium, once I learned a little bit more, I realized, it's not supposed to be that way.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be, and a lot of people, they'll serve their beers really cold, and that's to hide a lot of that harsh, hot alcohol. And really, you want it a little bit warmer, and, you need to have some control over your fermentation. You need, a nice, clean, healthy yeast that you're using, and appropriate strains, and, temperature control, and... All that makes a big difference.
Yeah. Well, how important is cell growth in a Belgian? I mean, the ester production. And,
I think it's very important.
So you don't want to overpitch.
Right.
I mean, everybody thinks high gravity pitch a lot of yeast.
You need growth. These people who are, I'm interrupting Chris here. People want to hear him. But these people, it drives me nuts. People go, oh, no, don't. Repitching yeast is fine. But they're taking the entire cake of yeast from a previous batch, and they're putting new wort on top of it. And that's way too much yeast. You're not going to get enough growth. You got a bunch of cells that are ready to die. You got a bunch of crud in there. You don't want to do that. You got to have yeast growth in order to get the appropriate flavors. So you end up with a weird beer without yeast growth.
I agree, and that's the second thing that I tell brewers when they're looking for more flavor from Belgian strains. The first part was to allow the temperature to go up, but yes, pitch less. and let that yeast grow and develop those flavors. And again, that's something they might not be used to doing if they're used to pitching a lot of yeast for a pale ale or a lager. But then on a Hefeweizen or a Belgian beer, and if you pitch a little bit less, you can be surprised by actually getting the flavors you're looking for.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just pitch 2 vials now. I don't even do starters for Belgians anymore. 2 vials per 5 gallons. Great success. Finishes out dry. So,
or,
definitely viable.
You know, 1 vial and a small starter.
That works, too. Yeah. The morning of.
1 liter starter. Yeah, just get it active, and toss it in there. Mm-hmm. And, yeast growth, very critical to the overall flavor profile of your beer. And if you, like Chris is saying, you know, maybe try a little less. You know, don't. And this whole, you know, using an entire yeast cake from a previous batch, I think, is bad news.
Right, because brewers like to see that fermentation is happening. They say, oh, you know, but fermentation started in an hour. But that's not good. Yeah. You feel good because it's going. And we've talked about this on the show before, I think. But you want 8 hours. You want 10 hours before you see active fermentation. And that is the yeast absorbing all the nutrients that are in the wort, going on the right timeline. Then they start reproducing. Then they start manufacturing these compounds that are going to become the flavor compounds. So if you don't give them that time to start growing and metabolizing these compounds, they'll never produce those other compounds that are going to be the flavor and aroma compounds.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yep. No, I just brewed a strong golden and a double, and you know, 8 to 10 hours in, you know, I was still just not seeing anything. That's fine. Didn't worry me. I wasn't panicked. Next day, I go and check, and sure enough, it's going quite well.
Nice.
But that's fine. You got to have the growth. Give the yeast the time. And if, you know, use good sanitation, you know, good practices, you know, protect your wort from wild yeasts and stuff. And it's fine. You can leave it overnight. It's not a bad thing. You know, on lagers even, you know, it's not a bad thing to be overnight.
As long as you have the yeast in there that you want. I mean, chances are they'll probably beat up the bad ones.
Yeah, and, you know, especially in lagers, I think people are way too panicked over getting them going quickly because if your wort's down in a colder temperature, you know, the bacterial activity or wild yeast activity is lower as well. So not a big deal.
Well, Jay-Z, you know you've made it when the whites just show up at random for your show.
Yeah, well, you know.
Or
you made it.
Maybe you showed up for them to appear on your show.
That's awesome.
I predict high levels of downloads for the show as I put their pictures next to the links here.
Sounds like we missed the best part.
Oh, wait, let's load up on some more information here before, you know.
I'm not stopping anything.
More questions from the chat room?
That's what I actually, the chat was very excited to see these guys come in here and talk about these things. But they're really just, they're kind of running the gamut here, talking about wild yeast and different sorts of fermentation vessels and starters, and it's a whole other show going on in the chat room.
That's fine. That's fine. I got time. Kids are in the hot tub. It really doesn't matter.
They're ready to go.
And Dr. White here is, you know, ready to roll, right, Doctor?
Well, one thing, I'll tell you this. You had mentioned using the yeast cake. Somebody said about how hesitant they are to use salvaged yeast in general because of infection. And I think that Chris has talked about that on shows with us before, too. And you, I had talked about it that I was going to do it. I'd done it a couple of times. Uh-huh. And you said, yeah, well, go ahead, you know, and see what happens. And one of these times you might get an infection, and you'll know why we say...
Yeah, if you can't ensure that you've got good sanitary practices and that you know you got a healthy pitch of yeast, I would tend to start over. I would get myself a new a couple of vials and go from that, or a new vial and a starter and go from that. And I think that's really the way to go. And the other issue is. Like we're saying, you know, you need to, if you're reusing that yeast, you really want to, you know, use the appropriate amount of yeast, not too much, right? Not too, you know, I would err, and this is one thing, you know, I listened to that Sunday show when you're on, I would err on the side of too little yeast rather than too much yeast. And again, I think, you know, people go crazy with it. They, you know, they want those fast starts, and they've, you know, that's what they've heard, and, you know, you need to put this ton of yeast in here. And I would err on the side of too little rather than too much.
I think that's kind of what you had said in the on the shows anyway, White.
Yeah, I agree.
It's just
the only thing I didn't agree with you on that show, and people are probably wondering, was your experiment on the brake material in the starter.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And I think I gotta disagree here because first off, you know, the temperatures were off by what 10 degrees you said.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I think that's a significant difference in one thing, and then even if you cool a wort down to 70 degrees. It forms some brake material. It drops out. If you take that same wort after that and you chill it down to 32 degrees, there's 60% of your cold break right there. So all that material is still in solution. So the majority of the brake material is still there.
Right. Every time you. There's a lot of brake material that sticks around every time. Every brake, you'll get more.
And I think there's more than the yeast can use.
But I think there's a lot of lipids in the hot brake, too, that are helpful.
But isn't
helpful.
There more than they can use?
Well,
At 80 degrees or 70 degrees, there's still so much remaining in there that hasn't formed a brake material that if you had one at 80, one you collected from the boil and you let it cool down, versus one you collected at 65 degrees, there's still a ton of lipids in there, isn't there?
Yeah, but I think at that point it's more protein than it is lipids. And it'd be interesting to see for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But because it is harder to break out protein.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the thing to do is to do this experiment the same temperature, same wort, and much more controlled and repeatable.
Right.
And then we truly see.
Right, and it depends how you're making the starter, too, what kind of difference it's going to make, but because you either give them the lipids in the beginning or you oxygenate them a lot, which forces the yeast to make
their own
the
lipids
themselves,
yes.
Right? Uh-huh. Either way, you're going to get yeast growth out of it or recover poor yeast that's not very healthy.
Right.
And it sounds to me like in talking about different aeration techniques, that aeration is so inefficient anyway with how much just comes right out of solution by the time the yeast end up using it, that it almost seems like having some of those other nutrients. If it's either or, if you're saying you can get the lipids there, you can get it from O2.
But I thought, what I've read is that, it's much more difficult for them to utilize the lipids from the brake material than it is, their first choice is to use oxygen.
Right.
And then, when they don't have any oxygen, they turn to the lipids too. And what it is, they're trying to synthesize the sterols to keep the cell membrane pliable. Okay. Otherwise, it becomes very stiff and they can't bud and create new cells. They can't, the permeability across the cell membrane suffers and they have a lot of problems with that. So that's what they're using this for. And like you said, the viability suffers. They won't be able to produce as much yeast. But the first thing they pick up is oxygen. They'll pick it up quite quickly as well. So, I'd like to see that, And maybe I'll do some experimentation on that. I got plenty of copious free time here.
Yeah, I'd love to do some more experiments on that too, because that particular experiment you're mentioning, we talked about the Sunday show, the temperature was different at time of pitching, but then how many hours later, it's hard to know, they were about the same, because then they were incubated at the same temperature, and over the course of 24 hours the growth was still significantly higher in the wort that was collected from the hot brick.
Well,
this is a trip.
And actually, I think the only the only problem I have with it is that you guys seem so certain that was the result.
Oh, that's maybe the way it came over on the air.
That's the way it came over.
But no. But at first, I thought temperature. But then, as we monitored the cell growth over the next couple of days, that's when I thought, this might not all be temperature. Yes, it started faster in the starter because of the higher temperature. Mm-hmm. But look how much more cell growth we're having consistently over these 2 days.
Uh-huh. Now, did you oxygenate at all? Or
no.
Stir plate or nothing?
No.
It was just work. Okay.
But we did compare to a stir plate, and the stir plate sample never caught up, even on a stir plate, to the starter that was non-stir plate.
Uh-huh.
And hot break.
See, that's what I had gathered, is not that you were so certain that was the finality, but that you were certain that there were nutrients coming from the break that were contributing to that.
Yeah,
you know,
there's some. Sure. More than anything, I found it interesting and that it needed to be looked at more carefully.
Yeah. I agree with you.
So there's no way we could really say for sure if it was more nutrients or if it was temperature.
Especially one test, nobody repeating the experiment.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anytime you have an experiment, you know, it's not really proven. When one person does it, you have to have somebody else repeat your experiment and get the same result, and then it becomes proven.
And against the control and the whole thing.
Right.
Why the hell? Why do you guys got to do this to me?
Now John's reeling.
Well, I'm just thinking about the amount of like lipids and proteins that are soluble in solution and the amount that's still there. Will that affect my fermentation? Should I cold it? Should I crash it? Let it heat up? I
mean, you won't be sleeping tonight.
That's a trip. I don't know.
No, but I thought that Sunday session when you guys were on, I thought it was one of the best ones in a long time. I thought that was really good stuff.
It was a fun show.
Good show. All right. You got to give them what they want, Jay-Z. You got to wrap up the recipe and
more questions?
Do the follow-up. No, you know what?
We got the Whites here.
I know. They're just listening to you guys. They're actually very into, if you have more questions for White, I think that's what they want to hear. They're very much listening to you interview.
Oh,
so,
me?
Not them. That's what I mean. They're listening to you and you interview White. So if you have more while you got them, do it. Otherwise.
I got a question. If you're a beginning home brewer, and you're doing partial boil, and you've got all that crap in the bottom of your kettle, you want to strain out as much of that, or do you want some of that brownish-gray material, which is cold break, right?
True. Hot break and cold break.
That's a food source for yeast, correct? Somewhat a nitrogen source. So you want some of that, but not all of that.
I think you have plenty of that. If you're planning on repitching the yeast, and if you're a beginning homebrewer, you're probably not. But if you're planning on repitching the yeast, my understanding is excessive break material can coat the yeast cells, just like the isomerized alpha acids of hops can coat the cells and reduce viability for repitching. So you might want to on ales. I don't care. I run the whole thing in there. It's fine. I don't see a big deal. On lagers, I tend to try and I don't go nuts about it, but I try and leave at least the bulk of it behind when I transfer to my fermenter.
Okay.
Wow. We've tried a lot of experiments with yeast storage and trub levels and higher or lower trub levels. We don't see that suffocation. I've read it as well, but we don't see a suffering in vitality or viability with very high trub levels, actually. Mm-hmm. But we haven't seen a benefit either.
Right.
But there is a benefit of some trub.
So would you rather have brown or green? The hot break or the cold break? Some more of that or the...
Probably the brown.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just throwing it out there. I mean, for the beginner brew or something. So.
Yeah. No, that's a good question. That's a good question. But and you've seen the stuff where when there's a high level of isomerized alpha acids, that coats the yeast, viability drops off a cliff. And there's actually, I've seen patented methods, listed where they actually try and remove that from the yeast to restore viability.
Right, and that's done a lot in commercial breweries, too, to remove to debitter the yeast, because a lot of yeast is used in animal feed, so in cat food especially. So and cats don't like hops.
Right.
So they do
strange
debitter
cats.
The yeast.
No wonder I don't like cats.
But apparently,
I have
cats,
a cat. Yeah, come on, give me a break.
Too.
Talking to a couple of companies that do this, cats seem to prefer Coors yeast over Anheuser-Busch yeast.
Huh. Really?
And this is a puzzle to people
who do
this.
Pussy always wins.
Independently verified.
They do trials, with cats.
Yeah.
And consistently, according to this one company, anyway. The cats prefer Coors yeast, and they don't know why.
Interesting.
After a couple of beers, I wonder what the cats think.
I don't trust cats, so I'm going Bud.
You're dirty. You're dirty.
I do have a caller on the air question, but although it was from, I've been leaving the poor guy hanging for a while now.
Oh, there's a whole bunch of,
I don't know if it's a yeast question, but hang on. I think it's a yeast slurry. What's happening, my friend?
Hey.
Question for the guys?
Yeah, I do. It's a yeast question. It's
good.
About the pitching a second yeast.
Okay.
Usually, like after the fifth day of fermentation, I pitch a second yeast. But I was wondering if it was like a yeast that you guys thought. I mean, I pitch Nottingham because it's a little higher attenuating. But
okay.
I don't know if it's not as clean as 1056 or anything.
In a saison.
Yeah.
You know, it depends on what the you know, is this an active Nottingham?
Well, on the fourth day, I threw it in a beer bottle full of DME mix, and then throw an airlock on it for like.
At what temperature?
Then toss it in.
What temp?
What temp?
Usually around 75.
Yeah. You know, I would tend towards, you know, either a cleaner yeast like WLP001, or, you know, a Belgian strain that had kind of a similar flavor to the Saison that might go well with those flavors you get there. And and also, most of those Belgian strains do attenuate quite well. So they tend to be a little more drying, and so you should be able to find a good Belgian strain that would kind of marry up with that, I think, and you know, that or something like the Saison 2 that White Labs has now would be very similar. I imagine you guys probably threw a Belgian strain in there, right?
As the second yeast. Saison 2. So
pardon?
If I pitch with that second, would that go farther or?
Well, the Saison 2 has their Saison yeast, and then, if I'm not mistaken, it has an additional yeast in there. And I think, if I was a betting man, I would go with, a Belgian strain as the second yeast.
Saison, no, it is a pure strain, the Saison 2.
The Saison 2?
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Only you have a Saison blend now, that's right.
Right, we have the blends. So the blends have three or four strains in them, mm-hmm. and the Saison blend has four strains.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's a question from the chat, too, that I need you to
Another kind of unusual yeast some brewers have used on Belgians and Saisons in particular is a wine yeast, is our Chardonnay yeast. And that's become a little popular because it's a beer yeast family, so it's not a traditional wine yeast, but it has some of the flavors that people seem to like.
A lot of fruit character.
It's got a Belgian style character to it. Yes.
Okay.
That won't kill the other yeast. It's not yeast killer yeast.
No.
That whole killer yeast thing. I don't even worry about that.
They're all friends,
right? It's something in nature that exists, but
it's a myth.
It's only a couple percentage of brewer's yeast have ever been found to have a kill factor, and a few wine strains, but not very many.
It's like the female orgasm. You never find it.
Speak for yourself.
We haven't been looking.
Looking in the wrong place. All those guys.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for the call, brother.
Okay, thank you.
Cheers.
All right. We need to wrap this up because these guys need... they didn't show up to talk to me. They
yes,
showed
they
up
did.
To do do yeah. other things.
We're here for you. Real quick, though. They wanted you to talk about your WLP 568 Saison blend. You want to mention what that is real quick for Jamil? We're apps up.
Well, yes. The Saison blend is another... because saisons are popular, and it is, it's a mixture to create more flavors, more complexity, and fast fermentation. So you don't have to worry so much about fermenter design, whether it's an open fermenter or closed, or temperature as much, because it's got a mixture of strains. It's got a little some of the traditional saison yeast, and also some of our Belgian ale yeast.
Cool. That's exciting to me. I kind of want to try that because you want to mix yourself, but why not let the pros do it and then you just pitch
it? I bet you people are asking, you know, fermenter design, open, closed, what does that have to do with it? And doesn't it have something to do as well with even depth of fermenter?
Yes.
You know, you end up with a higher partial pressure of CO2 the deeper the fermenter goes, and the higher the partial pressure of CO2, the more it kind of restricts the yeast, and you end up with, less of those... characterful, fruity esters and things like that, the higher the pressure of CO2. That's one of the ways they do some lager strains. If they want to produce a lager at a warmer temperature to get it done quicker, they keep a little pressure on the tank, and it'll suppress a lot of those flavors. Doesn't really turn out right, if you ask me, but
right.
That's one of the ways to keep the yeast from producing any real flavor as well. So.
Right, as you said, Jamil, the pressure restricts yeast growth. So, in fact, some of the best Belgian style beers I've tasted from commercial breweries have come from open fermenters.
Mm-hmm. Allows the yeast to really, get going.
Mm-hmm. When you do your blends, do you do them by cell count?
We produce the yeast separately and we blend them together afterwards. But the blends are all from strains that we have experimented with growing together. So we know the growth curves. We know they grow together. We know they won't outcompete each other. Okay. Even though that's subtle among some brewer strains, but some will have different growth curves.
Interesting. Cool.
So a foil instead of airlock then? Somebody in the chat room asked that for the
sure,
no pressure.
Sure. I think the whole airlock thing is kind of overdone. Okay. I think you can always use just foil over whatever container you're doing. You know, just let it hang down enough on the sides that you don't have to worry about any the remote possibility of some strong wind blowing something in. Hmm. And as long as you don't have any crawling creatures around, fruit flies that like to, you know, land and crawl, and or ants or something like that, you just loosely throw a piece of sanitized foil over the top. Works great.
Okay.
You know, same thing for starters or whatever. No airlock needed.
Yeah, thank you for spreading that message. I think that's great because I'm a big proponent of that mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. That the airlock is just overused. Its place is later on, but not in the beginning of fermentation.
Yeah. Okay, mm-hmm. Interesting. So maybe just at secondary or something, when you'd want to really seal it off.
Or like day two, day three of ferment once it's grown and
after high krausen, basically.
High krausen. Yeah. Okay,
great.
That's a good tip.
All right, Jay-Z, it's all yours.
All right, so Saison, starting gravity, we're going to go about 1060, or 14.8 Plato. Again, you want this thing to finish bone dry, so we're looking to try and get a 1.008 or 2 Plato finishing gravity. That's about 86% attenuation. Oh, I'm sorry, Chad's beer is coming to me. IBUs, 27 IBUs using the regular formula. That's going to give you also about that amount of attenuation, getting about 6.9% ABV. And you're going to use, as an extract brewer, 7.7 pounds of Pilsner liquid malt extract, or 3.49 kilograms. Cane sugar, use a pound or 0.45 kilograms. Wheat liquid malt extract, you're going to use 0.75 pounds or 340 grams. Munich liquid malt extract, a half a pound or 227 grams. And Kara Munich, you're going to steep 2 ounces, 57 grams. That's really a 60 love. You can use an 80, 120, whatever. It's really just to give a little color and a slight bit of flavor enhancement there. For an all-grain brewer, replace that Pilsner wheat and Munich extract with 10.5 pounds or 4.76 kilograms of a continental Pilsner malt, 3/4 pound or 340 grams of wheat malt, and 3/4 pound or 340 grams of Munich malt. Mash at 147 degrees Fahrenheit, 64 degrees C. You know, hold that until you get a good conversion. You're going to use, for hops, a 4% Hallertauer. Again, use any Hallertauer strain is fine. 60-minute addition, 1.7 ounces, 48 grams, gives you 26.5 IBUs on the Rager formula. And then at knockout, I like to have a 3/4 ounce or 21 grams just to give you a little bit of flavor there. And pitch the White Labs WLP 565 Saison Ale or one of the other blends. I haven't tried those yet, and I bet you those are a great product to use. Or the Y Yeast 3724 Belgian Saison. And ferment, you know, start out 68 degrees Fahrenheit or 20 degrees C. You're going to want to, you know, after the first day or so, start ramping that temperature up. You eventually want to get yourself to 80 degrees Fahrenheit or 27 degrees C. And that should be a great saison. All right, the next show coming up is I Don't Know.
That sounds like a good show.
I never know.
Premium American Lager.
Ooh, oh, actually, that's a good one. Actually, we're going to do the premium, the standard, the light. We're going to do them all in one, and okay. Then we'll have another show after that. And you'll be interested in what you can do with those things and how to make a great one. And it's really not a bad beer. You should be sure to tune in for that one. And great show, John.
Yeah.
And thank you.
Thanks,
cheers. To the Whites for showing up.
Well, thank you.
Made a great show.
That's fun.
Brew strong.
The Jameel Show has been a production of the Brewing Network. Please send questions for Jameel to Jameel at the Brewing Network.